This is 6, Chapter 6, Conflict and the Value of Support Groups. I feel better already are the words that a minister spoke at the end of a two-hour support group meeting. He was one of six ministers who had spent the time sharing realistic concerns and thoughts about problems that had recently stressed their ministries and their personal lives. Support groups. I believe in them. I have participated in several of them during the past 10 years of my ministry. My first experience in group meetings was as a parole counselor for juvenile delinquents. In those meetings, I saw juveniles talk with their peers and gain ideas on how to deal with some of the problems that were stressing their lives. It was more valuable for them to talk with each other and arrive at solutions rather than sit in a classroom or under the instruction of a parole officer in order to learn about acceptable behavior in society. I ran a number of groups as a parole officer because the caseload which we were given was so large, and it was also impossible to visit each of these children in their homes and encourage good behavior on their parts. And so a part of what I did was to form support groups or therapy groups and meet with these children on a regular basis. And the progress that we made during that time that I served as a parole officer largely was made in these various support groups. A few years ago, I was invited to receive training in developing and leading support groups by one who is an innovator in such programs in my denomination. The information I gained from those hours of instruction only confirmed what I'd come to believe while serving as a parole officer and pastor down through the years. That is, there is tremendous therapeutic value for a person to be with his peers and talk through his problems while listening to the members of his group share their experiences and insights on how to deal with those problems. Let me say it again. There's tremendous therapeutic value for a person to be with his peers and talk through his problems while listening to others share their problems, their experiences, their insights on how to deal with these problems. Through this common sharing of burdens comes strength, encouragement, ideas, and battle-proven techniques from members of the group who are concerned about helping the one who has shared his problem. This is not to suggest that psychiatrists, psychologists, and those of the counseling profession do not have the skills necessary to help a person, but rather it is maintained that working through problems with your peers, with associates, with colleagues, working through problems with these people brings a group of persons together who have a variety of educational backgrounds, who have a variety of resources and experiences that, when practically applied to the problem, bring about realistic suggestions for a solution to that problem. Maintaining support groups can be very helpful to the minister before, during, and after conflict. A discussion of support groups will be presented in this material under three headings. First, what is a support group? We'll make some effort to define or give a definition of support groups. Secondly, we'll discuss support groups and conflict in the pastoral ministry. And then thirdly, there'll be a discussion of how to begin and maintain a support group. First, the definition. Coming together on an occasional basis and talking with other persons about concerns during a meal is considered by some to be a support group. But according to actual definitions of a support group, such a meeting is not a true support group meeting. Now, I realize there will be some who will take offense at this remark. But it isn't really a true support group in the terms and definitions that I've come to know down through the years. Without a doubt, these kinds of meetings can be of support to a person who is in need. But support group meetings occur under a different set of circumstances. For the next few moments, an effort will be made to clarify what is and what is not a support group meeting. First of all, what they are not. In answering the question about the nature of support groups, it is probably best to begin by stating what support groups are not in terms of their nature and existence. It is important to understand what they are not in order to keep them from degenerating into meetings that have no significance or value for those who attend them. First, a support group is not a gossip group. A support group is not a gossip group. It must never become a group where the members gather for the purpose of discussing the various sordid ramifications of a minister's problem who is not a member of that support group, who is a member but is not present for that meeting. The support group must not become a gossip group. If a group assumes this character at all of its members can be sure that if the absent member is the topic of discussion at one meeting, then another member of the group may be the topic of discussion when he is absent. Gossip groups have no redeeming value, largely because time is spent talking about people rather than with people regarding their problems. Obviously, talking about people rather than talking with and listening to people never even broaches problem-solving efforts. It must also be kept in mind that ministers seldom trust others of their own profession. That's right. Ministers seldom trust others of their own profession. Many ministers are painfully aware of how trusting a colleague at one point in ministry resulted in embarrassment, confusion, or loss of some sort. In too many places, ministers are just as competitive as are professionals in the worlds of business and industry, and this competition has been the driving force in their relationships. Unfortunately, in competitive relationships, one person will take advantage of another if he has the opportunity to do so, and it will further his own cause at the same time. In other words, to tell a competitor of one's needs and weaknesses is to divulge information that will help the competitor succeed, while the one giving the information may fail. The minister, or rather the person the minister trusts more than anyone else, is his wife. He will tell her virtually anything. He regularly needs feedback on what's happening in his personal life and public ministry. Although the wife is frequently very helpful, it's not always fair, however, to dump these problems on her. The minister needs a trusted friend, or the minister needs trusted friends who are as receptive as the caring wife, but are as confidential as the confessional priest. Remember, gossip groups are doomed to fail. No minister will be a part of a group that spends its time primarily in the discussion of other ministers and the sordid problems that may exist in their lives. Rather, the minister of integrity will decide to invest his time in more productive areas. Support groups are not gossip groups. Secondly, a support group is not a prayer meeting. Now, I realize that this statement will offend some ministers because they have experienced great strength and encouragement during private and public prayer times in their lives. They will cite the place and the value of prayer in their lives, and as drawn from on the teachings of both the Old Testament and the New Testament. And they will tell stories of how God has responded to their prayers and the prayers of others. Now, all of these arguments have veracity. All ministers should have a regular and consistent prayer life. God should be a minister's best friend. God knows all there is to know about the minister and his problems. Every sincere minister realizes God's guidance and leadership in the small and the great areas of life. In addition to a minister's relationship to God by way of prayer, however, there is a need to hear from and regularly talk with those who are making their pilgrimage through life on this earth. It is good to be with people who have laughed and cried, who have mourned and bled and even lost loved ones. As they share their human experiences with one another in support group meetings, the members are edified, they're strengthened, they're encouraged, and they are uplifted. The fragile human spirit wants to be shown regularly by other competent people how they have succeeded in their pilgrimage. So, while prayer has its essential place in the life of everyone, including the minister, prayer is not the driving force for support groups. Now, ironically, as a support group meets, prayer can occur at its beginning. Prayer can, of course, take place in the middle of a support group meeting. And it may be that prayer will be a part of the closing of a support group. Prayer may be the main thrust of the meeting, as occasions warrant. It may be that during the outpouring of a member's story, the need for divine intervention will be so strong that prayer will turn out to be the nature of the meeting. This is all right. This is all right if it's what the group moves forward during the meeting. And it could happen during several support group meetings. As long as it is what the group desires, it is an acceptable instrument to be used during support group meetings. Let me say again, support group meetings are not prayer meetings. Thirdly, support groups are not training sessions. There are plenty of training sessions available to ministers in most denominations. In addition to denominational training programs, there are colleges, there are seminaries, there are professional schools that teach the special skills a person desires to learn. Support groups can evolve into training sessions if they begin meeting without intentionally declaring the meetings to be dedicated to being a support group in nature. I say that again. Support groups can evolve into training sessions if they begin meeting without intentionally declaring the meetings to be dedicated to being support group meetings in nature. Some uneasiness in the first couple of meetings may prevent the members from establishing bonds that are necessary in support groups. Then one or more members will suggest, well, let us begin to discuss a problem, or let us begin to discuss an issue. And if this happens, it will be more difficult as time passes to move the members into the structure of being a support group. Again, be careful. Support groups can evolve into training sessions when the group meets and feels like they have nothing to discuss. Somebody comes along and says, well, let's talk about this or let's talk about that. And then it's hard to get the meeting back into the mode or the shape of being a support group. Groups that have the purpose of training persons to use new skills are fine. It's okay to have training groups, but do not call these training meetings, these training groups, support groups. They're not. Neither are support groups brag sessions. They are not sessions where you go about bragging about what is happening in your life and ministry. Now, yes, a part of the support group philosophy is to encourage the minister to share something about the successes that he is enjoying in his local congregation. These kinds of meetings can be inspirational to the minister who may be looking for encouragement, who may feel down and out, whose church is not doing so well. And encouragement is indeed a part of that substance which comprises a support group. Incessant bragging. Incessant brag sessions, however, tend to discourage the minister who has not had much to brag about in the past several weeks or months of his ministry. On the contrary, rather than feeling encouraged, rather than being encouraged, the minister who has suffered decline in his church may be even more discouraged when he leaves a brag session. He may even leave this type of meeting wondering about his own skills, wondering about his competence as a minister when everybody else there is talking about all the great, good, and wonderful things. During support group meetings, share successes to the point that they'll serve to encourage fellow ministers. Be sensitive to the fact that churches and their ministries differ. While one church may grow with the slightest bit of effort, another may grow only after long, hard work has been done by the pastor and congregation. Realize these facts. Realize this when giving or receiving information about church growth during support meetings. Support group meetings are not brag sessions. Then, support groups are not study groups. If a support group is lacking for issues to discuss, it often is because of the existence of a low trust level that is there in the group. And rather than work on developing trust, some members will advocate the discussion of a book that everyone has or will be willing to read. Being somewhat like training sessions, study groups do have their value. They have their value if the members are present for training purposes. In general, however, ministers who have set aside a certain period of time to meet with or be with other ministers every 2 or 3 weeks will often drop out if they see that the group is becoming a study group rather than a support group. It is helpful, however, when a member of the group shares something he has read or learned with other members with the intention of using that material to serve as a model for himself or other members who have been struggling with a problem that is pertinent to that material that's being presented. It must be emphasized at this point that an effort is not being made to suggest a support group structure that is so strict that it prohibits more than it allows. But a definite structure is being advocated because it has been observed how support groups do degenerate into meaningless gatherings where those who expected more therapeutic content left them. They left because there was nothing going on for them. There was no therapy occurring during the process of these meetings. Although the next thought on support groups may have been intimated by earlier remarks, let it specifically be said at this time that support groups are not meetings that are led by specialized professionals. It may be, for example, that someone in the group feels the need for a counselor to come, a counselor to participate, a counselor to attend the meeting, to share his insights on the dynamics of certain personal problems. Surely the counselor will have some helpful ideas for ministers, but the person who needs that specific help should meet with the counselor rather than invite him to the support group. In fact, guests should not be invited to the support group, but if they are, it should not be without the knowledge and the agreement of all of the group members. The reason for this rule is based on the nature of support group meetings. That is, a good support group is formed out of the common feelings of a certain body of individuals who have certain things in common. A small level of trust begins to develop. It is that bond of trust, intimacy, confidentiality, and integrity that give the support group its life. If guests, books, or training is injected, the group is set back in its effort to become the cohesive, supportive body that the members were originally seeking. Finally, a support group is not a preaching session where a minister or ministers preach at or admonish others in the group. A support group is not a preaching session. Preachers tend to be preachy. So much of the minister's life is spent in the preparation and delivery of sermons that this baggage, this attitude, this character is carried everywhere. And that's okay. That's normal. Too often, ministers find themselves talking at someone, however, rather than talking with someone. It must be remembered that a person who joins a support group has done so because he wants to tell his story. He wants to tell his story to some person or persons who will hear that story and respond to it. If the trust level has developed, he may even share some intimate details in the process. The group must be extremely sensitive to this cathartic expression and be careful. Be careful not to preach at one of the members who reveals his burdens. Yes, there is a time to preach, but there's also a time to minister by listening. There's a time to minister by listening to the concerns of a fellow traveler. Now, let me give you in the next few moments some definitions and clarifications as to what support groups are. Support groups are as Old Testament history. Being based in the concept of deep and rich fellowship, it is recognized that even God Himself had a desire for such relationships. Further, God saw man's need for companionship and created woman, as stated in Genesis chapter 2, verse 18. And the Lord God said, "It is not good that man should be alone. I will make him an helpmeet for him." Jesus had his support group. He had his support group of 12, and even a smaller group of Peter, James, and John, with whom he shared his hopes, he shared his dreams, and he even shared his anxieties. Now, God the Father and God the Son saw the value in being with and sharing their lives with others. Then unquestionable credibility is given to the concept of support groups. A general definition of a support group is that it is a gathering of 4 to 12 persons who have common interests and concerns at a neutral and private place on a regular basis for the purpose of expressing those interests and concerns with the desire to receive directions, corrections, and affirmation by reviewing their own beliefs under the scrutiny and input from group members in order to enhance personal, professional, and social relationships during that period, as well as future stages of life. Yes, I will say that again. I think this is important. This is a definition of a support group. It is that gathering of 4 to 12 persons who have common interests and concerns at a neutral and private place on a regular basis for the purpose of expressing those interests and concerns with the desire to receive directions, corrections, and affirmation by reviewing their own beliefs under the scrutiny and input from group members in order to enhance personal, professional, and social relationships during that period, as well as future stages of life. The number of persons in a support group can vary from a minimum of 4 to a maximum of 12, with the typical number ranging from 5 to 8. The intent is to form a group where those persons in it have an opportunity to participate in dialogue with normal frequency. That is, some groups have as many as 12 persons in it, but the group's composition is such that every member gives input on a fairly equal basis. Another group may have only 4 or 5 members, where there's hardly enough opportunity for them to give equal input because of the dynamic nature of the group. Smaller groups occasionally have dry spells when attending members have little or nothing to discuss. Larger groups also risk the possibility of precluding a member who wants to tell his story from telling it because of the agenda of the large group. Although the size of the group itself occasionally reduces group effectiveness, an active group will recognize and correct the problem by making necessary adjustments to the group's process. How many persons should be in a support group? At least 4 persons, and no more than 12. At least 4 persons and no more than 12 should be in the group, with members remembering that each group member should have the opportunity to participate in the group meetings. Obviously, ministerial support groups all have the work of ministry as a primary concern. On some occasions, it has been observed where ministers who are 20 to 25 years older than other ministers come together in a support group and they share their wisdom. They share their experiences with younger ministers who do a great service for those younger ministers in these meetings. Those who have several years of experience in ministry can relate information about events when they feel they have made wise choices and decisions, while at other times, some of the decisions were not so wise, not so productive. In the same groups, however, it has been seen how younger ministers bring encouragement, enthusiasm, and fresh ideas to these meetings. What I've just been talking about is one of the most beautiful aspects of support group meetings. Ministers coming together, sharing ideas and suggestions on what to do and what not to do, what worked and what did not work. These things alone bring such value to a support group meeting. Now, this is not to say that the group has become a class of instruction, but it presents the members an opportunity to receive input in reference to their application of ministerial skills they learned during their ministries. Some of the suggestions that come out of these meetings will be based on youth and enthusiasm, while other suggestions will be based on accumulated wisdom and first-hand experience. One denomination that has seen the value of the mentor-student relationship is developing a program that will require the student to have some of his training based on the ideas that have been mentioned above before he can obtain his seminary degree. There is value, great value, in support group meetings.